Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in again to another episode of Going Places with Ernie. Today, I am with Steve Caccio from Champlain National Bank. Everybody knows Steve. Your face has been on the front page of the newspaper so many times, Time Magazine, and, right? Well, this is the wrong Steve, right?
Yeah.
No, actually, everybody does know you. Steve, I want to ask you a couple of questions. I know you've been, how long have you been with Champlain?
Just about 6 years now.
About 6 years. And I know you came from banking and from New York City, actually, right?
I spent some time in the city, but most recently, Syracuse Market.
Syracuse Market. I want to ask you about, you know, we've gone through COVID-19 and we're still in the midst of it right now, but I want to ask you, we were just talking a few minutes ago about what Champlain National Bank did with the PPP loans. And a lot of people don't know what the PPP loans were. I had a customer in the other day at one of the stores, and somebody was talking about it, and he didn't know what a PPP loan was. So because, you know, he's an individual. He knew what a stimulus check was, but he didn't know what a PPP loan. So, you know, for everybody listening, perhaps you can educate us on this.
Sure. Back last April in 2020, the government clearly saw the risk to businesses related to shutdowns, right? The government said, hey, you need to shut down because of the risk of COVID. And so they came up with a program called the Payroll Protection Program, or PPP. And back in April, that was phase one. And really, anyone that could show that they were impacted by COVID-19, the pandemic, could apply for money.
And any type of business.
Any type of business. And there were some restrictions depending on, you know, size, number of employees, those type of things.
But you were maxed out, right?
It was, given the number of employees.
Like IBM couldn't go for something.
Correct.
Like this,
I think
right?
At that point it was maybe around 500 employees or so. And they did reduce that in the second round, which started up this year, which were just kind of ending. And we can talk about that as well.
Okay.
But we... So that was really to get out there to help businesses keep people on the payroll as they were shut down. We actually did a little over 270 loans totaling about $26 million. And that went out very quickly in that time frame. It went out as a loan, and then the businesses can apply for forgiveness of that, meeting certain criteria, showing that those funds were used 60% for payroll, and then they could use another portion of that money for, like, utility bills, interest, expense, those type of things.
Could they use it for infrastructure improvements?
No, not really. There was, in round two, they made it a little more liberal. If you had, like, money to pay for PPE, right, personal protective equipment, or for restaurants that needed to build some outside space for people to eat, those expenses were allowed under the second round. But yeah, the government really, you know, felt the need to put that out there. The banks did that. It was really beneficial. Helped a lot of businesses and kept a lot of people here employed that would have probably been laid off as a business.
It kept our dealerships going. I know the Delabellas availed themselves of this initiative, and because of that, and also because they're nice people, they kept everybody employed. You know, some people chose to come back during COVID-19. Others decided to stay home and avail themselves of the checks that were coming out at the time because they didn't feel safe. You know, I worked all the way through it. I think you worked all the way through it, right?
Well, banks, financial institutions were categorized as essential businesses.
We were, too.
You know, we have to continue to keep the monetary system going, and people need access to their funds and businesses. So, yes, we worked through it as well. We did, you know, any staff that we could have worked remotely, did so, some of the, you know, office staff or things like that. But our branches were always open. Maybe the lobbies were shut, but we did have drive-through access. And, of course, all electronic systems were going. So, yes, we kept all employees on as well through the entire thing.
So the PPP program, which is was funded by, and there were two initiatives, right, two waves of this, right? And you were involved, your bank was, Champlain was involved in both of them, right?
We were. So then the second round started this year, probably January time frame. That just shut down because they ran out of those funds here this month, just earlier, maybe last week even. And we did a little over 200 loans there, totaling about $16 million. A little fewer loans because, of course, this time they looked at it and said you had to show that you had a 25% reduction in revenue quarter over quarter from 19 to 20. So this time that had to be shown. Lowered the employees down to like 300 from 500, and some other restrictions on it. But we still did a lot of that. And we, you know, financial institutions, we funded all of that. We had, that was our money going out. And when the loan is forgiven through that process, then we receive the money from the government. The SBA.
This is a lot of responsibility for your bank. I mean, you're the guy sticking your neck out.
Yeah, no, it was very hard.
I'm surprised. I didn't realize that part of it.
Yeah, and we, you know, I give total credit to our staff. They did a wonderful job stepping up, you know, working around the clock to get these loans processed and in the SBA, because it was always that risk of the money running out. And we have the customer base that's saying, hey, you know, I've been approved yet. Is it in? So, yeah, we worked very hard on that, but we felt it was important to get that money to our local businesses.
Did you... Something like this entails special training on your staff, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, they had to go to either webinars or something. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like a normal loan process.
No, the program was brand new, right? So we were learning as the SBA was providing the information. It was really just any guidance they would put out on their website or send to financial institutions. And then our staff would have to go through that and decipher, okay, this is how we're going to handle this. And so it was, you know, and it changed periodically as they made changes to it. So then we had to adapt to that as well.
What a shock that this changes as it goes along. Before we were talking, I know that you came from, before you were in government compliance, you worked for the United States government, right?
I did. I worked for the U.S. Treasury for 7 years.
U.S. Treasury. Did your training at the Treasury help you with this?
It did. It did. It is the background I received, their overall banking knowledge and understanding what regulators or the government's looking for is beneficial as these programs come out. So, yes.
Let's say I was a business owner, and it must have been a lot of documentation that you required to hand out millions of dollars. Like, I mean, some of our businesses, I'm sure, didn't get millions, but let's say $500,000 is quite a bit of money. You were giving loans for that amount too, right?
Loan sizes were very varied, right? It was, you had some that could be over $1 million, depending on the size of the business,
and
the number
of
employees they had, down to a few thousand dollars, to your point.
But the documentation...
was the same, correct. On the forgiveness aspect, it becomes a little easier. The small, if you're below $150,000, the documentation the government's looking for forgiveness did change, and they did reduce that burden, which was a good thing. But up front, we were obligated to really look at the information being provided to say, okay, does this meet the standard that they're looking for? So we really looked at, a lot of it had to do with payroll information to look at, is this seem reasonable, the money they're asking for per the number of weeks? Because they first started out, they had 8 weeks to use, you know, to use that money for salaries.
Right.
And then they extended that to 24.
Right.
So we had to look at that and say, okay, is the money they're looking for reasonable related to the information they're providing us?
From an employer standpoint, you know, I'm fortunate. We have accounting firms that work at the Dela Group. We have payroll and HR people and all that kind of stuff. Because I think we have like 500 or 600 employees. But what about a small landscaping company who's got 3 or 4 guys out there working, maybe the wife does the books at home? It must have been difficult for somebody like that to get all this together. And because, like you said, I mean, you want to give the money out, but you also, if you gave out the money and you didn't protect yourselves, you're going to wind up owning it, right?
There could be some risk there, yes.
Right.
So we really tried to help that customer to say, okay, here's what you should look for. Here's the information that you do have. We'll utilize that. Because you're correct. As the firm got bigger and they had the accounting staff or external accountants, they would utilize them to provide the information and make sure.
Did some of these smaller businesses go out and seek professional accounting help on this? Did you know that?
I would say if they had relationships with accounting firms related to tax work or other things that they do bookkeeping, yes, they did.
Yeah, because I'll tell you, it would boggle me. I get nervous with things like that. I think I'm pretty good with forms, but I could just, you know, even doing my own taxes, I'm like, oh, boy. Look, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, normally government forms are not the easiest things, and they did. You had to, you know, some of the questions or things you had to answer, it was important, because then it would either, you know, not go through or it created questions.
Obviously, I'm not trying to find out how much you guys made, but the bank made something off it. I mean, you don't work for free.
Yes.
Was there an administration fee, or you got a certain percentage, or?
Right. Well, when the loans were booked at a 1% interest rate, that was
it's pretty good.
That was what was allowed under the program, and then the bank did receive a fee related to the loan size, and it was kind of a scale depending on smaller to larger what we received.
Right.
So yes, it was compensation related for us
too. So. Now, how long did the businesses have before they could apply for forgiveness?
They'd have to, of course, meet that, show that they utilized the money for the purpose, right? So that really drove that. And then they extended that out from the 8 to the 24, so that pushed it out. We have, I will say right now, we are still in the forgiveness phase of round one.
Okay.
A large majority have started to go through that because then they have to apply too. That's really, we send information to the borrower, letting them know that forgiveness is available. And again, there's another process with that. And you know, majority are starting to react to that and we're getting that done. We have not done any forgiveness on round two yet since it's
Do they make payments, monthly payments, while this is going on?
No. The only time it would go into a monthly payment is if it's not forgiven within the term of the loan, then it does read that it will term out.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So any business who avails themselves of this program better make sure that they're dotting their I's, crossing their T's, and watching as the clock is ticking to make sure that they're doing everything that they're supposed to do.
Correct. And we're helping with that process. We're sending out reminders. We're sending out, actually, we have a system that we utilize through this to help us gather information for them to apply. So we're sending out reminders through that, allowing them to upload the information right to that through a link. And then we can get that going for them. So we're monitoring that as well to try to help them make sure they get through it.
You know, you remind me of something. You were kind enough to attend our Honda President's Award winner, which we earned last year, which was a big deal for us. And we had a nice little party for dignitaries like yourself.
Well, appreciate the invite. And yeah,
the food was good, wasn't it?
It was. And as you say, congratulations again, because I know that's quite an accomplishment to receive that.
Thank you. The guys worked very hard, all the ladies and guys over there. But I remember you attending, and you and I were talking about, COVID at the time was just being discussed. It was March of 2020, if you recall that. And you just reminded me of it a few minutes ago. And do you remember our conversation? We were saying, oh, this should be over in a couple of weeks.
Right, I do. We were talking about it. It was starting to, you know, hear about it, right? It really wasn't here, but we were hearing some rumors about it. I know everybody was using hand sanitizer.
Yeah, we had it there.
Yeah, you had it. And
nobody was wearing masks, though.
No masks, no. Right? And we were all gathered there. And then quickly after, that's when things started to shut down. No one, you know, I don't think any of us at that time imagined the length of time it would take to come out of this. And, you know, we're pretty optimistic right now with the vaccine distribution the way it is and the numbers that we're really starting to see the end of this.
I'm asking you this because, if you don't mind, how did it affect bank profits? I mean, a lot of businesses, I felt sorry for the restaurants, the entertainment industry went down. How did Champlain survive? I mean,
you know, it was a challenge for everyone, right? Your industry,
yes,
ours,
very much so.
And it was new, right? I don't think any of us had really experienced a pandemic related to that and had to manage
a shutdown.
That.
No,
right.
Never been a day, maybe, but not for months.
You know, we had certain as financial institutions, highly regulated. We did have pandemic planning. That was part of our contingency planning, business resumption, business continuity. So we had things in place. One of the things that was very helpful is our technology is to a point that we were very quickly able to adapt our workforce to a work from home environment for those that could, almost instantaneously. Without, they're at home and it's just like they're at their desk. So we were fortunate to have that in place. As far as the branches, we did make some changes. But yeah, I mean, we did not see, I mean, back to, I think your original question is really, you know, profits, that's unknown, right? We're a lender, you know, bulk of our income comes from the interest we get on loans. And when you have industries that you've lent to that clearly are shut down, right? We, not only did we do the PPP loans, the amount of relief we gave, whether it's on the business side or consumer side, you know, probably at one point during the height of it, we probably had over $70 million of loans that were in some state of deferment as people were going through this.
And for those listening, deferment means no income coming in. Nobody's making payments. That's a nice way to say it. Oh, we're going to defer it. Basically, you're stiffing me right now. I'm not getting paid.
But, you know, it was important for us to work with, and we understood where everyone was. But, you know, so that's an issue for financial institutions. Money we had to put aside in the event they were unable to come back from this. And the loans we had to this. So
the federal government requires certain things like that, right?
Right. So they look at your allowance for loan losses, it's referred to as. So we had to make sure that we did the right thing there to put more money in that. So, you know, more than we would have budgeted to put in. So all those things, yes, have an impact on our earnings.
And you're a small bank. You're not like Bank of America or any of those, you know, huge international Chase, you know, that have branches all over the world. You know, your branches are pretty much in Clinton County and Essex County, right?
Correct, that's it. Essex and
your family, you're mostly a family type of industry over here.
We are an independent local bank, have been since 1909.
Right, exactly. So, you know, if you get hit, what would take you guys out wouldn't affect a Chase. They would laugh at something like that where it could be catastrophic to you.
Right. Everything's, you know, relative to your point, and absolutely. So it's... But you know what, our clients were very good through the whole thing too. You know, it's all about communication. I think we've talked about this before.
Yes, we have.
You know, let us know what's going on. We're able to help. How can we help and get through this? So the majority, I'm happy to say, have gone back into repayment, doing very well. We still have a few industries that are experiencing, you know, it'll be slower to come back. Right?
Restaurants, I think.
I think you mentioned that. Hospitality, those type of things. Of course, as travel's starting to go up. You know, the border being closed is not helpful to our area here.
So that, what do you hear about that? I mean, you know, I read the... I follow the Chamber of Commerce and all that, and it's kind of nice that they tell you things. But what are you hearing about the border? Is this going to stay closed for the rest of the year or what?
You know, I know there is a lot of people working on it that would like to get it open. I think the problem is Canada is well behind us in vaccine distribution. And until that gets better, I mean, they're in pretty much still a serious lockdown mode, even internally. So I think until they get better, I'm not sure when that... It could vary. I mean, we're already... I mean, hopefully maybe sometime this summer, but it could be later.
You know, I'm shocked about that because every time I talk to somebody, it's, oh, we should be like Canada. They have a great health system. They're this and that and the other thing. And plus, they have great hockey teams. I mean, I don't know what one's got to do with the other, but I'm really shocked. And I love our Canadian neighbors. I'm just kind of surprised that they would be lagging. I would think that they would not only be abreast of us, but maybe even ahead.
Yeah, I think the government and our pharmaceutical companies, you know, it just can't be overemphasized, the effort they put in to the government by allowing this special authorization to get these vaccines so quickly out there have really been a game changer for us, right? Something that would normally take several years, they did within this time frame, and we're seeing the benefits of that compared to other countries in the world, right, and where they are today.
Some really strange things have happened during COVID-19. And, you know, now, for instance, with your company, we're not allowed to require my coworkers, because I'm not an owner, I'm an employee just like everybody else, we're except for the Della family. I'm not, I can't require people to get vaccinated. No, you just mentioned you were vaccinated, I'm vaccinated. How are you approaching that with your staff?
You know, what we've done through that process as we went through different phases of eligibility when they rolled out the vaccines, we just continued to provide that information to our employees. You know, as it became certain age groups or issues were able to get the vaccine, we just constantly, got that information to them, told them where they could get the vaccine,
right.
Whether it was Estes County having, you know, some things, whether it was ECH, the hospital there, or just the county, and then, of course, here in Clinton County, out at the air base, just tried to get information to them. I would... say the majority of our staff has really embraced it and has done it. So we have not mandated, I know
it's kind of hard to do that.
It is, but I think overall, I think the vaccine rate among our employees is very high.
Yeah, I mean, they're shaking hands. You know, your employees and all your banks. I usually use the one on Route 3 up by my dealerships, the Toyota and Honda stores. That office over there, but they're always so friendly. You go, "Hey, Ernie, hey," they know you by your first name. It always makes you feel good when you walk in, you know. So now that we've discussed enough of COVID, I'm so sick of it. Hopefully a year from now when we do this again, you'll sit there and say, "Oh, you remember those days?" It'll be like a discussion.
Oh, we'll definitely remember them, I'm sure.
So let's talk about some things that are upbeat now. For instance, right now, if you're out there listening and you have a 30-year mortgage and your credit is halfway decent, what would you recommend somebody do with a 30-year mortgage right now where they got 27 years left? What would you tell them to do?
Well, I think depending on when they got that and where the rate was, it's always a good idea to look at it, right? Look at, is it time to refinance? Rates are historically low still.
They're unbelievable.
Yeah, they're low. And will they go up at some point in the future? Well, you know, mortgage rates kind of go off the 10-year treasury. And you're seeing slight movement there, day in and day out. It comes down and it goes back up. And the amount of stimulus money that's been put into the economy, we're already seeing it heat up, right?
You're
seeing,
inflation.
Inflation, right. That word. That, you know, is it temporary? Is it permanent? You know, there's a lot of people talking about that. So I would think, though, you know, rates are probably going to move up at some point.
I agree with you.
So if you're...
Car loans right now are historically low, but... Yes, yeah, it's not going to be like this forever.
No, it's not. So it is a good time to look at that, absolutely.
Yeah, because, you know, I think that somebody's got a long-term, you know, it's interesting, switching from a 30-year loan to a 15 or 20, it's amazing the hundreds of thousands, depending on the amount of money that you owe, but it could be $150,000 you could save over that period of time.
Yeah, shortening the term. Normally, it's a lower rate to begin with because you're on the same interest rate risk. So you get a lower rate, and you're paying it back faster, more principal going down every time you make the payment. So, yeah, you save a lot of money. We also offer a biweekly product that people may want to consider.
They do that in the car business. How's that work?
You know, it's a nice product. So, to your point, a traditional 30-year AM actually pays off in probably like 21 years or so because you're just making that payment every 2 weeks versus monthly. So again, the payment's faster coming in, your principal's paying down, you save interest money.
You know, it's interesting because I have a young couple that friends of mine at one of the stores that work there, and they just purchased a home. So, you know, I congratulate them and all that, and he told me they signed on a 30-year mortgage. And I said, why didn't you go 15 to 20? And they said, well, the difference was like $150 a month. And they said, we're going to kick that in anyway. And I says, can I tell you something? For my life, I always said things like that. And I never did. I said, but if I knew that I had to pay X amount of dollars every month, and that was the paper that I signed, somehow it happened. And they were like, well, no, we think we can do it. I said, well, maybe you're a better person than me. I always believe that. I'm not going to rely on my willpower.
Right. Things come up. Right?
Things come up.
And so you're right. Having, you know, if you're disciplined like that and will do that, it actually will save you a lot. Even if you're making one extra payment a year, you know, those type of things, people don't realize what that can do over the term of a 30 year.
So let's talk about your friend Elon Musk. You know, you guys are buddies, aren't you?
I wish.
Yeah, I wish. Me too. You know, yeah, but he sells Teslas. That's all. I don't need him. You know, Tesla's a good car, but I'm waiting for Toyota and Honda to come in with their EV cars. The reason I bring him up is the other day, you know, he made a comment about, well, he's actually done two comments. One was Dogecoin, you know, and all of a sudden it went down and then it went back up again. And
well,
then,
he tweeted last night about that again, and it's up to today.
What's it up to, 60 cents or
something?
Yeah,
it moved back up today on his tweet last night.
A couple of guys at the dealership bought it when it was 10 cents, and they're like all millionaires now. They're all sitting, hey, Ernie, I got $11,000 sitting there. And I was like, wow, that's amazing.
It is.
You know, one guy spent $800, $700, and he's got $11,000 sitting there. I was like, well, I don't know where you could spend this coin at, but you get the same thing with what is that, Ethereum or something? Ethereum?
Ether, and you've got, of course, Bitcoin, which everyone's very familiar with. That's been around a long time. Last time we spoke, we spoke about that.
Yeah, it was at 200 and some odd dollars a coin, I should have bought then. I mean, now it's at 50.
A lot of people are saying that.
I'm an idiot.
You know, as we've talked, you know, cryptocurrency, blockchain technology, it's here. It's here to stay. I don't know if all of them that you see that are trading today or that are out there will, you know, make it.
Do you do business in that? Is this bank?
We do not.
Do you accept deposits in that?
No. No.
I'm just curious.
No, yeah, no. It's a great question. Not at this point, right? You see some of the major banks, you know, I know that JP Morgan Chase and others have started to talk about it, right, and their involvement with it.
Because they do that. They validate this.
Correct.
The minute they say, and that's a serious validation
right.
now.
And you hear even, you know, the Treasury Secretary talk about it. And, you know, the problem that I see with Bitcoin or Ethereum today is the volatility, right? I mean, if I'm coming in to purchase a car, right, you know, so you're going to take Bitcoin when, okay, an hour later that could have now just gone down, you know, major swings and lost a lot of value, but I accepted that.
Whereas a dollar's worth a dollar.
Right.
Yes.
Well, today, right?
Right.
You know, that now with, again, you know, we could have a pretty long conversation probably about the dollar and what, you know, long-term impacts all the stimulus and the amount of money we're printing could have on that.
Which could devalue it, yes.
Which would then start to have some people saying, well, now that could even help some of these currencies, right? Something like Bitcoin or whatever.
Right.
Historically, the U.S. dollar has been the standard. But in other places, you know, that have seen their currency change quite a bit, maybe they're looking at this blockchain technology or crypto as that other option for them. So I think there's still a lot more to be seen on that, but it's here, it's not going away. I don't know how many will be at the end, but it's
I don't know where you spend it. Like, for instance, we don't accept Bitcoin. You know, the our CFO Christopher pretty avant-garde, the guy's a very, very smart man, and I asked him a while ago, I said, what's your position? He says, Ernie, we don't accept it. I know some businesses are and some aren't, so it's not universally accepted. I don't think I could go to Starbucks right now and use my Bitcoin. I don't own any, but if I did, to buy a cup of coffee, you know? So that's got to affect its value, doesn't it?
Correct. I think when more regulation around it comes, now does the, you know, maybe does the U.S. government come and start to have some type of cryptocurrency, right? And get more validation around it. Just talk about that, you know, to compete with that. I find it, and you know, you're in the business as well, I think our payment systems and our ability to move money today is very efficient to begin with, right?
Oh, yes.
I mean, we have an extremely efficient monetary system.
And so many ways to pay your debts or to get paid.
Correct.
So many ways.
You know, between, you know, right on your phone, I could send you money right now, you know, all of those.
Let me give you that number. Feel free. Go into the vault. Yeah, I'll just take it with me.
Right. So, I mean, we're there. So
right.
I think that's one of the struggles with it is it's not like what we have today is not efficient. It is. I mean, God, if you see today, we're doing ACH transactions. I mean, we're going same day now.
Yes.
You know? So we have people working later than historically we'd shut down because we have to receive that last ACH that's coming in and process that same day. So now, you know, we're working well beyond, you know, what we'd normally probably have a previous cutoff. So when I talk about that, it's happening. Yeah, Bitcoin, all of those, they're interesting.
I got to tell you something. I recently did my taxes. You know, May 17th is the day. I don't know if you've done yours, but I pushed mine to the last day because I always wind up having to send a check, and it's just a miserable day for me. But it is what it is. I noticed when I was doing my preliminary, I always do what I call the preliminary checklist, get ready for that final day when I push the button. It asked me if I sold and made any profit off of cryptocurrency transactions. Did you see that when you did yours?
Yeah, and because
that's the first time I've seen that.
Well, the reason they're doing that is just think about that. If you had bought it, right, very low, and now where that dollar amount is, that is a significant gain, right? Is it a capital gain? Is the value there? I think so. They want to understand what value is out.
But do they tax that now?
They haven't yet because. Unless you would actually show, I think, that you sold it and got money, right? Are you true?
Yeah, I think I didn't. I just checked. No, so I didn't go through the form. But imagine so. If I was to sit there and say I bought it at, let's say, a dollar a coin, and then I sold it at $600 a coin, that's a 600% profit. And now from $1,000, I'm worth $1.8 million.
Couple wants a piece of that.
Oh, my God. I would hang myself. Imagine that.
Yeah.
They want a piece of it.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, because they're seeing that. And again, all these new things that are coming up related to it that they're trying to understand and get around. Yeah, it's interesting.
So I think a lot of people are going to find themselves in some very weird tax situations because it's, like you said, the government is watching everything. And, you know, I guess if you did make $1 million, you should pay tax on it.
Right,
like
any other investment, right, that you would have and those capital gains. And, you know, it looks like I think some people are maybe taking more of that today, anticipation of, you know, maybe capital gain rates going up, the tax on that, or income taxes, you know, so.
Yeah, I know, something to look forward to. You know, before we go, what do you see going on with the Champlain Bank now? You know, I know we all survived a very, very tough period. I'm so glad, you know, our dealerships, we survived. There were days when I stayed up in the middle of the night wondering if I had a job the next day. I'm sure you worried about it too.
Yeah, I mean, just again, trying to keep our employees safe, our customers safe, you know, and making sure again,
yourself
and the and overall our, you know, business as a whole related to lending and other things we had out there, and what did that mean?
So I guess, you know, here we are almost in June 2021. Where do you see the future of your bank right now? Do you have any new initiatives, any new projects that you're undertaking?
You know, increase in technology is always something we're looking at.
Are you going to have a more robust online banking presence? Is that coming?
Well, I think what we're looking at is much more, we found through this, the ability to do much through more electronic means like signatures, applications, loan closings. The ability to do that's helpful. So we'll probably enhance that.
That came because of COVID.
Correct.
Yes.
You know, we had, I think as an industry, we were fortunate because we had, you know, full function ATMs, online banking, mobile banking that you really could do a lot through. Take a picture of your check and make the deposit. We as an industry had a lot of that, which was extremely helpful. But there were certain points where we felt that, you know, that it's still paper, right? That loan closing or those
touching
type of things. Yeah. So we really focused on that. So I think those initiatives are underway.
Our dealerships have the same issue because we do we use a pad for signature and all that kind of stuff, and wipe down the pad and then hand it back to them and all that type of thing. And there's very few, there's hardly any paper that goes in, which is nice. Everything's digital now. So you see your bank doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
What are the changes?
We're doing a little relocation out in our Saranac Lake market. We currently have a facility there, and we've acquired a property there. That was an old branch that somebody vacated, so we're going to move out there. We think that, because again, our current location doesn't have a drive-through, and we found that, you know, that was very important through this, so we're going to do that.
And your rates are very competitive. I know on auto loans, we have a lot of customers that request going through Champlain.
Right,
they like doing that.
That.
Well, they do.
Yeah, we have a, you know, great relationship with your dealership and appreciate that. And yes, we have, you know, that was the auto business for us is only about maybe 5 years now. We got into that. And I remember when we were getting.
Yeah, I remember. I came on board about 5 years ago.
Same time.
Yeah.
And we had that conversation.
Yeah.
We met, and you were very welcoming in the dealership, and we appreciate
it. It's been a good partnership.
It has been. It has been, and great customer base. And we are seeing that repeat customer with a trade-in coming back and asking for us. And we like that.
Well, I think also the difference between, let's say, a bank that's locally owned and operated and, let's say, a major bank. There's nothing wrong with major banks. I mean, they all provide pretty much the same thing. They loan you money and they expect payment. But a lot of times if you run into a situation or you have questions, you're dealing with an 800 number and somebody that's in Pasadena, California, or sometimes in Mumbai, India. You know, you're not, but here they could drop into a branch and say, may I speak to a loan officer or somebody, vice president of the bank, I'm running into a problem, or I need more money, or something's changed in my situation that maybe I need some guidance. You're not going to get that when you deal with a bigger bank.
Right. I mean, since our focus is totally here, right, to your point, you said it earlier, Essex County, Clinton County, we can provide that flexibility to a customer. Somebody has an issue, it comes up, or a question, or they can reach someone or stop in, and you know, we can provide that assistance to them easier than a larger bank that you're right is calling elsewhere, and then they have to follow an overall, you know, process.
Steve, I want to thank you very much. It's you know, I come out educated. I feel like I'm ready now to become a bank official myself.
Well, you have several openings.
Yeah, I don't know. You guys would get tired of me real quick. Where's Ernie? He's on a radio station again. Or I don't know. But I want to thank you, folks. Champlain National Bank. They're a sponsor of the group, but I also like talking to Steve. He's a very busy guy, and the guy really knows his stuff. He is like the main force behind this bank, and I want to thank you for giving me your time.
Thank you very much.